Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your struggler.
And I'm Xavier, the literal idea of evil. And we're joined today by our special guest, a rising YouTube superstar, in my opinion, a Real Life Ryan of the current channel Real Life Ryan 2.
What is up, guys? I guess I am I'm the Skull Knight of the interwebs.
Oh, that's fantastic. Before we get started, I do want to do like a minor content warning here, because one, this show not intended for kids, even though our favorites totally are, and two, today we're going to be talking just sort of the entire time about a series near and dear to all of our hearts, which is Kentaro Miura's Berserk. And there is some graphic content throughout all of Berserk, and this is a big warning to everybody. If that's not really your deal, we're going to try and avoid any direct discussion of spoilers or graphic content for the very beginning of it. And then once the episode goes on, we'll give you a little warning before spoilers, and then like a bit where graphic content may be more likely, just in case that's not anyone's dig.
Yeah. So I guess the place to start, and we'll pass it over to our guest to start, just like general thoughts and almost like a small review of Berserk in this sort of spoiler-free section.
Oh, man. See, Berserk to me, I think I gravitate towards a lot because of a couple of things. Number one is just its themes and ideas of just struggling and continuing on in the face of seemingly impossible odds. I know that's kind of a theme for a lot of stories, but with Berserk, nothing hits harder for me than in the story of Berserk, because you really, really see Guts struggle through everything. He has the worst life that you could possibly imagine. And it's not a series about, like, you know, the power of friendship or hope or anything, even though those things are in there. It's really a story about, you know, things are really, really messed up in the world. Things are horrifying. You know, not everything is sunshine and rainbows. You know, things are going to suck. You're going to go through a lot of hardship, but it's just about continuing forward no matter what, like just that absolute refusal to give up. And I just really like that message. And how Berserk conveys it, because to me, it conveys it better than any other story that has that kind of setup or that kind of theme, just watching what Guts goes through and seeing his like evolution as a person and everything. So that really speaks to me. And then also, Berserk doesn't shy away from any of the horrible things in life, you know? I mean, it might show it through the perspective of like a monster or a demon or creature doing it, but like you could still relate certain things to real life. Yeah. And I think not being shy about it, like not being shy, I can swear on this podcast, right?
Of course.
Okay. you know, not being shy about like showing like the rape and showing the trauma and showing, you know, the murder and stuff, like things that, you know, and just, being in this kind of like different society, because you see like the very poor side, you know, you see in like the conviction arc, you see like what these people are going through. And then you see like the really high and mighty society and the rich people and the, you know, the more elegant side of life. And it just shows everything, you know. It doesn't shy away from any kind of topic, idea, or theme. And I just like how it's so in your face, you know. It shows you how it is. And then obviously you have Kentaro Miura's artwork, which is just like every single page can be a poster, you know, every single page could be a tattoo. I want a Berserk tattoo, but it's just like, I look at every single page of the manga and I'm like, all of these could be a tattoo. Like these are all incredible.
Absolutely.
So to me, there's just so much to like, but I can understand why someone wouldn't like it too. You know, like it's not for everybody. Like I said, it really does not shy away from anything. So it's going to talk about deep stuff. It's going to show you the darker side of humanity. It's not going to sugarcoat it at all, which that's not for everybody. And that's cool. That's not for everybody, because the Berserk fans, you know, we understand it and we embrace it. So yeah, I think that would be the general gist.
If you don't mind me asking, and this is something I always find interesting, how did you come upon Berserk? Because it's not talked about the most on sort of like internet anime circles outside of like a few content.
Oh, yeah.
A few content creators.
My actual first experience with Berserk was the anime movie trilogy. And what's funny, though, is like I remember seeing trailers for Berserk the anime, the 90s version, in like the beginning of like tapes for other animes that I would own when I was younger. I remember seeing like the trailers for it and like thinking that it looked really cool, but I never sought it out. I never watched it. So like I had an awareness that it existed, but I never bothered to like look what it was about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And honestly, it's very, very simple. I was just like browsing through Netflix and Netflix has the trilogy of movies. And I was like, oh, Berserk. I kind of remember hearing about that. I was like, I'll watch it. And I had no idea that it was going to involve demons. I had no idea about like the eclipse or anything like that. I was just watching it as like, oh, this is like a medieval style anime. Like I had literally no idea of what was coming. And like it, by the time I got to that third movie, it was like this. It was like first movie, I was like, oh, cool, medieval anime. Second movie, I was like, oh, sweet, there's some more character development. This ain't too bad. And by the third movie, I was just like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, what is this? I was like, I'm like, my mouth was literally on the floor. I'm sitting there. I'm like depressed. Afterwards, I had to go like lay in the grass and look at the sky for like an hour. I was like, what did I just watch? Like, this was so traumatic and brutal. Like, I had no idea whatsoever. So obviously, after watching that final movie, like I had to know what happened next, you know?
Yeah.
And so like I went and I bought the first three volumes of the manga because I was like, what? I need to know what's happening. And that was basically it.
Yeah, I was forced to read it. Because I
you're forced to read it by like gunpoint.
By shame. Yeah. Yes. Actually. So I'm mostly an anime guy, not a huge manga guy. When I read manga, I'll like binge 100 chapters in a weekend and then not touch manga for like a month. And there was one point where I was looking for something to read for like a month, and Xavier just kept telling me, come on, Trey, read Berserk. Everybody, everything you like is going to tell me that you're going to love Berserk. Just trust me. Just read it. It took him like months of convincing me. And eventually I sat down and I read from the start of the Black Swordsman arc to the eclipse in like 4 days.
Damn.
And fell in love immediately. The chapter Wounds, which we'll get to much later when we're in the spoiler part, literally made me cry. Mm-hmm. And there's like no words in that fucking chapter, basically.
Yeah.
And then I put it down. And I was like, I want to know what happens next, but I'm not in a manga reading mood. Then this quarantine happened, and I remembered the themes of Berserk, you know, the struggle, the finding your purpose, the keeping on, you know. And I thought, what a better time to pick up Berserk than now. And I read the entire Conviction arc in like 4 days. And then I ended up stopping reading this Berserk around the time he gets the armor, like around the 240s-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I dropped it. And I was like, I'm good, caught up, whatever. And then I read a couple of chapters here and there. And then I read like the next 70 chapters the last 3 days in preparation for this. And I think Berserk might be the best manga I've ever read as like a not super manga heavy reading person. I was just forced by Xavier over time to read it. And I don't think there's anything I could say to do it a ton of justice that you didn't. The themes are incredible. For being so fantasy inspired, like we haven't really addressed what Berserk is yet. It's just a story of this guy named Guts and all this shit that happens to him and all this shit that he does to the world. For like 360 chapters, it's been in on and off writing for like longer than we've been alive. And it's as fantasy as it is all the time. It's one of the most like real things I've read when it comes to some of these character motivations, the character development, incredible supporting cast, incredible main cast. I wouldn't call it a fun read most of the time. It's a very dark read. It's not super fun, the action scenes are fun. They're frenetic. They're gorgeous. They're some of the best framed action scenes I've ever read in manga, right? But for the most part, I wouldn't call it a fun read. It's just an excellent one. And somehow the art at the very beginning starts off like above average. And by the end, it's like the best art I've in manga. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Like, it's godly. That's it for me.
Yeah.
So pre-shaming Trey, my co-host, into watching and reading Berserk. I discovered Berserk very young. I was like 12.
Nice.
I was like in my anime manga like mass consumption phase, because ever since I was a kid, I got bored very easy. So I would just sort of mow through media very quickly and was reading anything that came up, and Berserk managed to come up. And immediately I was like, well, my parents can never see me reading this. Right. Absolutely not. And I fell in love, and I fell in love with the art first, because I feel like there's a lot of the themes and a lot of the gravity that I couldn't appreciate as a kid that I got on a lot of rereads. But the thing that always amazes me about Berserk is it's colored my consumption of other things for like most of my life, whether it's been looking at how other things reflect the tropes of Berserk, like the giant sword or the guy in armor, strong silent types, whatever, or the idea of the eternal struggle. Because like you said, I don't think that there's another anime or manga that handles struggle quite in the same way, and that's not to say that they're like worse, but it's unique, and it feels real, and it feels applicable to life a lot of the time, even though some of these situations are like god awful and like people would hope you never go through anything similar to these. But what I find interesting about Berserk, especially with characters like Isidro, who we'll get into later, is that no problem is too small. All human suffering is like worth being looked at, which has sort of colored my view of the world a lot. And it's just an amazing story. I've heard people refer to it as Japan's Lord of the Rings, which, look, I really like Lord of the Rings, but that's a disservice to Berserk. But it's heavy fantasy, and he's slowly, even with these latest chapters, building his own fantasy universe up while keeping with a very uniquely Japanese understanding of life, death, and what it means to struggle. And I think it's just one of these rare, perfect synthesizations of culture. So that's my kind of piece on initial thoughts on Berserk.
Yeah,
definitely.
I'll be real. A lot of discussion around Berserk involves what many would consider to be very, very large spoilers. If anything about a grimdark medieval kind of fantasy story, that has very real struggles and has incredibly well-written characters and some of the best action and art in manga sounds good to you, you should go read it and turn the episode off now. And if you are the kind of person who isn't really here for the discussion of some graphic content, you should probably leave now, because I'm going to do the anime news and then we're going to go into spoilers. Like, I know it's early, but I feel like we kind of have to, you know?
Yeah, it's a hard series to talk about without going into specifics, for sure.
Yeah. So on that note, we'll go to the anime news corner real quick, and talk about our news for the day, which is the manga Drops of God, a manga about sommelier and wine tasting competitively, as far as I'm aware. Its final arc is reaching its climax, and I think only one of us here has read this to current, which is Xavier, so he can comment on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of really exciting. For anyone who listens to this that has followed Drops of God, it, by all accounts, should not have had a final arc. The original run ended in like 2014, but luckily it has been given a final arc, and it's been pretty amazing and has served as an inspiration for a lot of people. I know even we were like, how do you become a sommelier? You don't. It's real hard to become a master sommelier.
That's fucking true. And also,
they're embroiled in like, or at least the court of master sommeliers is embroiled in many, many scandals. So probably don't want to be involved with them. But yeah, I'm excited. And now that I think about it, like, Recently, there's been a lot of people talking about it because I think it was mentioned in like a couple Sid Snap videos. So like that's interesting.
There's also a mention of it in Super Eyepatch Wolf's Shonen Battle Series video.
Yeah, I think that's the only place I've ever heard of it was in, it was in that video.
Hell yeah, look at me. Our other piece of anime news is that the ever fantastic Hayao Miyazaki has received a Kawakita Award, which is just sort of fantastic because I'm not sure I can think of someone more deserving of a Kawakita Award. For those who don't know, I have been very recently informed upon looking into it that it's just sort of like a lifetime achievement award for Japanese cinema and influencing Japanese cinema and influencing international cinema from Japan. And the poster child for that, for me, is Hayao Miyazaki, as it is for many people. So shout out to the Ghibli team and Hayao Miyazaki for that fantastic, well-deserved award.
Yeah, absolutely. Just sort of a round of applause for Miyazaki. I think he's only the second animator or like within the first 10, right, to receive this award. Because I know that the first one was in 2012 and it was Koji Yamamura.
Okay. That makes sense to me. If no one else has any more comments about the news, I just want to do our customary thank everybody for listening. I know this is really early in the episode for this, but trust me, it's going to be worth it for the Berserk discussion. If you are liking the show, please share it with somebody you think will enjoy it, or follow us on Twitter at SatAnimePod, or just continue listening. Feel free to DM me on Twitter and ask me random shit about the show, because I'm on Twitter a lot, and my Twitter is fantastic. No one can change my mind on that. I have one of the best Twitters all the time. I guess now I'll let Ryan, if you want to shill Twitter, YouTube, website, whatever, before we get back to Berserk.
Sure. So I have all the social medias except TikTok, because I feel like I'm too old for that one. But on Twitter, if you want to follow me, it's RVK_movies. The only reason it's titled that is because that was like an old YouTube channel I had. Like back in the day, I got rid of it. It's deleted. But anyways, Twitter is still RVK_movies. Instagram is just Real Life Ryan. And of course, Real Life Ryan on YouTube.
Hell yeah. On that note, this is your official spoiler and content warning. So I just read like 80 chapters of Berserk the last 2 days. Berserk's fucking crazy, guys. I texted Xavier. I was like, there's a fucking sea god. We got Maros. There's there's ghost pirates and shit. And this is in like the part that no one even talks about. All the iconic shit with the Berserker armor is happening right now. It's fucking wild. What's everyone's you got it. You go. Take it.
Yeah, no, I just found it interesting because you mentioned it's the part that no one even talks about. And I was on Twitter and I think you saw it too. There was a post by another Berserk content creator about how it lost a lot of popularity, like right after the Golden Age arc ended and the Conviction arc started because the Band of the Hawk died.
I don't know how true that is. I'm sure it is true. But I do know that like a lot of people haven't read like the newer stuff. Like I guess the Fantasia arc is technically what's going on now. You'll see a lot of people talk about Golden Age. I'm sure a lot of that is mostly because that's what the anime covers. So that's what the majority of people have seen. It's also, I mean, I still do think it's the best story arc in the series, but that's subjective. But like Fantasia arc, I think just because of the long hiatuses and a lot of people didn't like the pirate stuff and how long it took them to get to the Elf Island and everything that's happening now. So a lot of people dropped it or a lot of people stopped paying attention. So I think that's why it's not talked about as much. I think a lot of people, got to a certain point or got up to Conviction or Berserker armor. And then after they saw that, they were like, okay, I'm good. You know?
Yeah, I can definitely see that because like children have been born in the time that it took them to step on the boat and then step off the boat, which is wild.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, so if we're splitting up Berserk into arcs, how are we doing this? We're saying like there's a Black Swordsman, obviously, right? Then there is up into the Eclipse from Guts Being a Child, which is Golden Age, right? When does Conviction end? I'm actually not 100% certain on this.
Conviction ends at basically after the tower falls and Griffith is reborn.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then and then it's the Fantasia arc, which we're
then,
right now.
And then Millennium Empire, which starts on the Hill of Swords, and then it ends with the astral world merging into the physical.
Yeah. That's where Fantasia starts. Okay, thank you. I just didn't know the distinctions on that. Which one's y'all's favorites?
Well, for me, I still think Golden Age is the best, and I'm saying this just from like a storytelling perspective. I just think it has like, I think it's just the most, I don't want to say complex. I don't want to like put any of the arcs down because they're all good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think Golden Age is just such a 10 out of 10. Like there's nothing wrong with it. It has no flaws. And it's also very like self-contained, like, you could have the Golden Age by itself and just have that be like a complete story. Sure, it ends on a really depressing note, but like it still ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like every other arc is kind of dependent on the other ones, but Golden Age really, really stands on its own. It's just like its own piece of like just 10 out of 10 material. It's got great stuff in it. The Guts and Casca relationship, which I'm a sucker for good romantic relationships and stories. So, you know, that kills me there. And then the Eclipse is just such like a masterful climax. Like, I don't know. Far and away is still my favorite, but that's not to say I don't love the other arcs almost just as much, you know?
Yeah. And it really is like trying to pick the best out of like things that if they were published anywhere else would already be like the clear in a way.
Yeah.
Completely.
For me, it's also the Golden Age arc for like many of the same reasons. And also I felt Miura had a talent. And this is also why Conviction is probably my second favorite, for making you feel like part of the team. Like when the Band of the Hawk died in the Eclipse, it felt like you were being betrayed for me personally.
Right, yeah.
Because even though Griffith was doing some fucked up shit, it always felt like it had a purpose. And then that all just sort of went out the window when the illusion of family was sort of drawn back. And watching Guts sort of get that again, and having this anxiety about what is going to happen to these people is some of my favorite parts of the Conviction arc.
That's completely fair. I was going to say, I think the death that's hit me the most is probably Judo. So, like, I understand the love there. I really enjoyed reading the Millennium Empire. Like, because the Swords on the Hill is one of my favorite moments in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? As are like a, I like that Salat is back, who I just always thought was a really intriguing guy. But I think I'm still with you guys. The Golden Age arc alone, fans who are still listening haven't read it. One of the best arcs in the history of the medium for me. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. It's a masterclass.
Yeah, I think Millennium Empire has the most hype moments, if that makes sense.
That's fair.
It has the Hill of Swords, you know, the Zod fight there, and you know Griffith and Guts the reuniting. It has the Troll Village sequence, the Dungeons and Dragons portion of Berserk, as I call it. It's got the stuff in the cave. It's got Schnoz. It's got the Berserker armor introduction. And then, of course, it has that final battle between Griffith and Ganishka, which is just insane. Like, absolutely insane. Like, double-page spreads of just gigantic demon versus demon. Like, out of all of them, that has the most hype moments for sure.
I'm with you. Xavier, go.
it just sort of seems like delivering on everything we've built up to, which I also think is why the Fantasia arc, other than just like the long hiatuses, probably feels really slow, because we've been building to this thing since the end of Golden Age, and then it happened and it was everything we were promised it would be. And now we're doing exposition, and like kind of the reward to that is like, now Casca's awake. Everyone should be happy about that, but there's like caveats to it that make it still interesting. So like, you're getting these little deliveries, but like Millennium Empire was like, here is everything you wanted. Have it.
Yeah. I mean, it was really like, everybody hates Griffith, but in a way, like, that arc was Griffith's rise. You know what I mean? Like, it was his ultimate comeback. and you got to see like pretty much everything be fulfilled that was promised to him, right? Like he'd have his own kingdom and people would look to him like a god and everything. So like everything comes to fruition in that arc, like you're saying, like it kind of everything that was set up was delivered on.
Yeah. And the Falconia spreads are fucking beautiful. Every single one of them. And like Griffith basically actually making like world peace among men a thing. Kind of wild to watch. Like if this is the kind of thing that could have been achieved without like the eclipse level sacrifice, we'd all laud Griffith, right? At least I would, because this is a fucking like achievement. He's done world peace. It's a pretty wild world peace, but he's done world peace. He's brought like men and monster together against like other monsters. And like, I guess the Kushan, but at this point the Kushan are with them too. So,
Yeah. Well, that's the messed up part about it, is because you could look at it as like this glorious thing, but we as the reader know everything he did to achieve it. So we see like, I mean, not just the Band of the Hawk stuff, but like he's the reason the astral world is like unleashed on the planet. So like he created the only safe place for human beings at the expense of like being the one that herded them there, you know?
Yeah.
But of course we don't know that. I mean, human beings don't know that in the world of Berserk, you know? And also I like the idea of him showing, he shows people like the dead spirits before they pass on.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, which is like super fucked up. If what is happening, if what I think is happening is really happening, that like after he shows it to them, you know, they go straight into like the abyss or straight into hell, that hell dimension or whatever, you know, that like all the apostles are pulled into.
Yeah.
Cause who knows, you know, we don't know. It could just be an illusion too. Like, you know, it's, and that's the thing, like that's also cool about Berserk, is because there's so much left up to the reader's interpretation, you know, that kind of stuff isn't like explicitly said to us. So like we can kind of infer what we think is happening with it.
Yeah. And you get like some really excellent moments with Rickert, where like I texted the line to Xavier when I read it like 2 hours ago, where it's like, I'm Rickert, a member of the Band of the Hawk. I don't serve the Hawk of Light, after fucking slapping Griffith, cause he knows all like the true shit. Which is a fucking killer moment for me. I thought that was fantastic. I'm excited to see where Rickert is going to meet all the Salat's homies and stuff. But it's interesting that like the reader, right, gets this kind of small payoff, because Rickert like knows the sacrifices that were made to get this piece. And I couldn't imagine like the pain in the back of my head reading this if we didn't get a moment like that until like Guts sees Griffith again or something. So that made like it all feel a little bit better to read for me, knowing that we got like that little respite of Rickert just fucking slapping Griffith, you know?
Oh yeah, that moment was glorious, man. That's one of the best like best moments of the entire series, I would say. I mean, that's like are you guys Hunter x Hunter fans?
Yes.
That's like Leorio punching Gene in the face. It's just like it's one of those moments where you're like, thank God, finally someone did it.
Oh hell yeah. I will say Hunter x Hunter, interesting reputation on this show. Because Xavier likes it, but thinks Yu Yu Hakusho is like way better.
Okay.
And commonly says that the only 10 out of 10 arc in Hunter x Hunter is the election.
All right.
No, part of that is just me antagonizing Hunter x Hunter fans, because many of them will yell at me for liking Yu Yu Hakusho better, even though like I praise Hunter x Hunter on the regular.
Oh, all the time.
That's neither here nor there.
I mean, Yu Yu Hakusho is GOAT, so I can't really blame you.
That's completely fair. We, in the last episode, we're talking about English anime openings, and we both like really shittily sang part of Smile Bomb, like the opening.
Oh, yeah.
Big fans around these parts.
I do find it interesting, the inherent distrust for Griffith, not just partially because of the eclipse sacrifice, but because we know what he is as a part of the God Hand. Like, it can't be as simple as he won on the deal with the devil.
I think I lost you guys.
Oh,
No, we're good.
Are you back?
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sweet. But like, it can't be as simple as Griffith won his gamble with the devil, and that nothing weird is going on. He just got everything he wanted, especially with, like, as you were mentioning, the souls passing on thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just really interested to see what happens. And I know Miura kind of walked back chapter 86, 87 and like trying to bring in the concept of evil. But I wonder how much of that is wrapped up in manifesting the concept of evil now that the astral plane is on top of the real world.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the crazy thing, because there's still so many mysteries out there about like that kind of stuff, like the ultimate goal of the God Hand, the ultimate goal of, you know, the idea of evil, if that's still going to be a thing. Because at least how I think it is, like, I don't think this is not to serve Griffith's ambition. This is to serve a larger purpose. And it's weird because, like, we don't really, because we haven't heard like Griffith's speaking in his head, like any inner monologue or any of his thoughts or anything like that. So like, we don't know how like on board he is with whatever ultimate plan is happening. You know what I mean? Like, like, what is the next step? And does the next step even involve Griffith? So like, it's crazy. Like, there's so many things up in the air that it could or couldn't be.
And given how strong-willed he is, as we saw in Golden Age, I can't even imagine that he really like gives a shit about the God Hand at all, like whatever the organization's purpose is.
So there's a thing I've been thinking about, right? Which is when Skull Knight shows up at the Griffith Ganishka fight, and just sort of does the big cut, and then everything gets fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. The way Griffith responds to Skull Knight, like, I'm kind of hints to me that like he feels under control with like the whole causality and the whole like God Hand's plan and shit.
Like, it was just fated to happen and he just has to play his part, kind of thing.
Either that, or he's like, nah, I got it. Like, Skull Knight knew you'd be here. Don't even worry about it. Like, this is how it should be. And then just sort of using the like Skull Knight's sword swipe to open shit up, as if like the whole time he's like, this is just part of my personal plan. Like, we knew you were going to be here. You got played by causality the whole night.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I definitely think that's the thing, is that because you're dealing with the idea of like fate and causality and all that, like all of this is predetermined, like the Ganishka doing his thing, becoming the giant that he became, and Skull Knight showing up, like, yeah, none of it surprised Griffith at all. Like, it was all part of the plan, as the Joker would say.
On that note though, like, thoughts and theories on Skull Knight? Like, what's going through y'all's brains on Skull Knight in general? Cause that's one of the big points where, there's still many a mystery to be had, even though we've been given details like drip fed for 30 years.
So like, I've seen a lot of theories about him being the king of a former kingdom and Void was like an advisor, or possibly even the other way around. I think the most interesting thing about Skull Knight for me is him being the previous Berserk armor wielder. And in this latest chapter that you haven't had the chance to read, Trey, I'm sorry.
Spoil it. It's okay.
They meet a dwarf, and the dwarf explains... And Skull Knight kind of explains, yo, you're using that armor wrong. So, like, at what point is Guts going to become a Skull Knight?
Right. So, yeah, Skull Knight is one of the most, like, intriguing characters. First of all, he's one of the most badass-looking characters in the entire manga. Like, just his design is just amazing. But that's one of those things that just, like, people have been theorizing and speculating for forever, that he's, you know, King Geyseric, the guy that had the gigantic kingdom 1,000 years ago. You know, we slowly got more information that he was the previous wearer of the Berserker armor. And in this last chapter that you'll get caught up with pretty soon, they go meet the forger of the armor. And he basically says, you know, Skull Knight, I'm glad the armor I gave you is keeping you alive, which to me confirms that Skull Knight is basically just a soul inside of an armor. Like, that he did in fact you know, quote unquote, die in the berserker armor. This is what I'm getting out of it anyways.
Yeah.
And then instead of his soul passing on to the next life, they were able to put his soul into this Skull Knight armor body. That's what I got out of it anyway. And
yeah.
And now the dwarf sees the berserker armor on Guts and he's like, oh yeah, you have not mastered this. I can tell.
And it's like, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's like Shriek. I'm never sure how to pronounce her name.
I guess Shriek.
How she's talking about the more times Guts uses the armor, the more it's harder for her to distinguish what part is his odd and what part is the armor's odd. And it's like, do you just sort of fade into it? Like, is that how this all works?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's because, I mean, to me, like the armor... I always picture the armor kind of like a symbiote from like Spider-Man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just this thing that attaches onto you. And like in the armor's case, it's digging into Guts's, you know, darkest self, his beast of darkness, right? It's basically channeling it, giving it like a physical form, you know, taking all your rage, your anger, your anxiety, like every part of you that's dark and like full of that kind of like, that rage, you know, bringing it to the surface. But the problem with Guts is like, it completely takes over, you know, he loses his own ego in the process and he just like becomes that rage. So what I get out of it is mastering the armor means mastering that rage. So it means incorporating it as part of who you are, but not all of who you are, you know, don't lose yourself to it, be able to use it for the right purposes as you want to, you know, controlling it as you will. And he does that kind of where he gets like the Batman Guts helmet, which I don't like that design, but like I get the concept behind it. And so I think it has a little bit more to do with that. I think it has to do with like, instead of the Beast of Darkness being this burden that Guts has to carry around, maybe he can kind of channel it into something good instead.
I'm interested to see where it goes. And I definitely could see the mastering being like channeling it into something and channeling it into something good. And I think I would prefer that level of control. Kind of still on the topic of Skull Knight. It is interesting to me, like the Sword of Ablution and the whole eating Behelits thing, because theoretically, right? Because we don't know anything. All of that like falls within causality. And I just, I'm interested in the inherent powers of a Behelit, because the Behelits have sort of been built up as this sort of almost like prayer rock that is just an agent of causality. So I wonder how much of Skull Knight is just sort of like the song and dance, because we finally seen it pushed back, like the curtain pushed back, because for the longest time it seemed like Skull Knight had the plot and Griffith was like, no, we made revisions to the script.
Yeah, that could be the reason why Skull Knight has never succeeded, because he could just be playing into this whole role of fate and causality, and it doesn't matter how much he tries to fight against it, because he's part of it. So that might be the reason why he kept such a close eye on Guts, because he always talks about Guts being like, you know, a fish that can breach the water surface. You know, you're this like thing that probably shouldn't have even existed, right? He was born from a corpse. Like, you know, he's someone that shouldn't even be alive. He's escaped death so many times. And it's like Guts can do these subtle little things to kind of like put a knot in the spiral of fate, of causality. And so I think what Skull Knight needs Guts for is for that, is to hopefully they're on the same page and they want to accomplish the same goal. But I don't think Skull Knight is able to do it. And I think that's why he paid such close attention to Guts.
Oh, I'm completely with you on that. Like I'm convinced that like the entire time Skull Knight paid attention was just because he realized, Oh, Guts, he can, in very minor ways, break the causality. He's the unpredictable element in like the whole God Hand plan. You know,
yeah.
Even if the God Hand thinks they've got it under control and everything. That being said, I do have another direction I want to take it. I just want to ask this question. That spirit kid is like, that's like their kid, right? Like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah. The moon child or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just clarifying, because like I've binge read like an obscene amount of this series, and things start to blur together a little bit.
Yeah. I am interested with this idea of Skull Knight using Guts essentially to like cause little breaks in causality because he sees that that's something he can do. About those early scenes of Nosferatu Zod with Guts, where he basically just says, "Hey, don't die," and the hierarchy of the apostles is very strange, where Zod is pretty high up there, but the God Hand seemed to like know everything. So I wonder how much Zod knows about the causality, because he seems to be aware of it, but he still seems to be almost rooting for Guts.
Yeah, it is strange because the apostles, you know, like they're subservient to the God Hand, but they're still their own entity. Like they have their own personality, their own drives, their own thing that they want to do. And Zod was just that guy that, you know, he just desires strong opponents. You know, he's a classic like warrior. He just wants to fight, you know, he's that guy. So I don't know how much he knows about like their, you know, true intentions and whatnot, but I don't think he's just looking for someone that can match his strength. And, you know, Griffith showed it to him on his level. Like Griffith came through, he like cut off his horn. And then, you know, Zod basically bowed down to him after that. So to me, I kind of took that as like, okay, Griffith displayed his strength to Zod and Zod complied. And in a way that might be what Zod is looking for. He's just looking for somebody that could possibly best him. And the other apostles too. I mean, like, the wild segment that they had, you know, he really just wanted to do his own thing and Zod stopped him. You know, he was like, he was going to kill Griffith and kill like everyone there, you know? Other apostles too, like I'm thinking about the Slug Count just did his own thing. And so like, Raxus, the Kushan one, you know, he still says that he might try to kill Griffith someday. He could just be, you know, BSing, but it seems to me that like each apostle really just does have their own intention despite being subservient to the God Hand.
So like, what do you think happens to those kind of creatures if Guts fucking murders Griffith, which is a thing I think will happen personally. I think Guts is going to kill Griffith and then fucking die. But I can't predict, you know, I'm not fucking Mira, but what do you think like a character like Grunbeld or like Zod does if they somehow live to watch Griffith die by the hand of someone else?
I think they just sort of move on.
Oh man. I gotta imagine there would be some sort of like, cause you saw just how pissed, Locust got when Rickert slapped Griffith, you know, I was just like tore like a handful out of the railing that he was holding onto.
Yeah.
So if that was the case, I'd imagine they would probably, you know, just come right after Guts, but you know, who knows, and who knows what kind of state Guts would be in that case. I mean, there's so many variables. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
there's so many different things that could happen. But, you know, we have to wait 15 years before we get a chapter to see what happens.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm going to be done with grad school, working and everything. And they'll be like, yeah, you get chapter 370.
Right.
And I should clarify, like, assuming that Guts dies in this fight, I think to a large degree, they move on to the sort of their personal wants and desires as they do. I think it becomes a whole lot more interesting if Guts dies, but there's still like four God Hand members still left, because that implies that causality just sort of marches on. And is there any way to like undo the astral plane just sort of being there now, especially now that we've been introduced and you will be introduced, Trey, to like the little witch academia, essentially, where there's just a school of witches.
I've seen the school for half a chapter. Okay, look, I'm caught up, basically. Yeah, I'm really interested for the implications of what happens at the end of Berserk. Like, obviously, we can't sit here and guess what's going to happen. I haven't been able to guess a shit the entire time I've been catching up. I've been getting outplayed by Katara Mira's brain the entire time.
Yeah, he'll do that to you.
Every single thing that happened has shocked me. It's fantastic. But yeah, I think if the God Hand is still alive and Guts dies, it says a really strong point about the whole causality thing, which is why I have no idea which way things will go. And I really love that about Berserk. I've never been able to tell what's going on for the most part. Like, I've never been able to guess a bunch of what's going on. Hell, they don't even, like, drop the name in the series until, like, chapter 240-something when they introduce the fucking armor, you know? Like, they never even say the word Berserk up until then, as far as I'm remembering. So everything comes out of left field for me. I have no idea.
Yeah, and again, I really like how a lot of it is up to, like, the reader's interpretation of what's happening. You know, I mean, I'm sure that Miura is trying to say something specific, but I'm just one of those people that always appreciates, like, different people's perspectives on things. And so, like, I like it, the idea of a story not needing to be one thing, but it could be, you know, whatever you view it as. Like, again, like, ever since Griffith came back into the world, like, we haven't had any inner monologue. We haven't heard what he's thinking in his head. We don't really know his true plans or intentions. And so, like, I like that idea, though. I think it's really cool that, like, we can try to figure it out ourselves. Like, what do we think? Do we think Griffith is still trying to perform some kind of secret plan of his own? Is he just following the God Hand? Like, is he unable to enjoy his success because he's just part of causality now? Like, does it even mean anything to him anymore to have a kingdom? Like, all of these things, you know, and it's up to us to decide.
I think one of the most interesting things to speculate on for me, and I do think that, like, one of the strengths of Berserk is it doesn't lend itself to one, like, reading or interpretation. It really lets you think about it and lets you think about what each event, like, down to the Godo's creation of the Dragon Slayer, means to you. Mm-hmm. But I'm always interested in if Griffith really meant it when he and Guts were on the hill and he said he doesn't feel anything anymore.
Yeah. That's a rough one, man. That's a rough one. I think he did mean it, but, it gets really, I don't know, it gets really complicated because I think for Griffith, the difference between Griffith and Guts is that Griffith never saw the Band of the Hawk as individuals. You know, he saw them all as just, like, a means to his own end. Like, they all want me to get a kingdom, right? Like, they're all on my team. They're all part of the Band of the Hawk. They're fighting for me. Like, in order for me to honor them, then I have to win. That's how Griffith saw it. But Guts saw, like, no, this guy has a dream of opening his own store, and this guy has a dream of doing this, and, like, they all want to do their own thing. So when Griffith sees, like, the grave of the Band of the Hawk, you know, he's thinking, like, it's fine. I'm gonna succeed now. Like, they didn't die in vain, you know? He doesn't have that. Like, he's a sociopath, you know? Like, he doesn't have that kind of understanding that, no, these are all people with their own lives that, you know, their own, like, each individual person, like, their death means something. But to him, it's like, it all means one thing. It means I succeed. And so I think that's when he says, like, you know, I am free, is that, like, he's not thinking about it that way. He's just thinking about, like, his own goal, his own ambition. Like, he's like, I got this.
I think that's one of my favorite things about watching, like, and reading, like, the new Guts squad, right, is being able to see, like, Griffith leading the Band of the Hawk compared to Guts and, like, his new gang of friends, if you would venture to call him the leader. I'm not sure if I would. But seeing just the way that this is how Guts versus Griffith interacts with what you would call, like, subordinates or, like, companions – has always really, like, shown the divide between those characters for me, because it's all the moments, like, Guts teaching Isidro how to be better at fighting for Isidro because he's a small guy, you know, mm-hmm. or, like, the moments where him and Guts and Serpico try and, like, murder each other and then eventually come to, like, a residual respect and friendship, or, like, watching Cher teach Farnese, or Farnese, however I'm supposed to pronounce that, magic, and watching Guts, like, encourage that, and just sort of seeing this kind of not sociopathic take at leadership, but he almost comes off like a dad to a bunch of these characters. Is something I've always really loved.
Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting for me about the whole I am free scene is Griffith says he's free and he's free of guts and he's free of the original Band of the Hawk, but he still seems relatively sentimental, like redesigning the crest to get away from the original image, but also still inviting Rickard back and still like,
lost you again.
Oop. We lost Ryan for a little bit. Ah,
it's okay. We can cut this out.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. And I will. But like, it's interesting to me to see Guts, kind of, or see, sorry, rather Griffith. You back?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I was just saying, it's interesting the scene on the hill for me to see Griffith say he's free and still be sentimental, because he still invites Rickard back. He's still like, place to the princess's fancy. He's still doing all these things that we would expect to see from the old Griffith. Mm-hmm. And even though like it all seems rather self-serving, there's this underlying element of like, you don't need these things anymore. People already see you as a messiah. So are you just trying to like piss off Guts more because you need to for the causality? Or is like there's something about what Griffith wants that he's not getting? Because at one point he wanted Guts.
Right, yeah. Yeah, man. So I mean, I think that like to him in that moment, you know, Guts, he goes to see Guts first. That's the first thing he does, is because he does, I truthfully believe that he did want to test to see if he still felt something for him like that, you know, if he was still going to be the only thing that could distract him from his dream. And he gets there and he sees that he's not like, I don't feel that anymore, you know? But like you're saying, like, could there be something else there? Because, you know, he does leave Guts on his own. You know, he could have killed him right then and there. It wouldn't have been a challenge. It wouldn't have been, he could have let Zod kill him, you know, but they decided for them both to leave. Some people say when they were escaping the eclipse, you know, Femto Griffith could have done something there, but didn't. Other people say, no, he was uncertain of his powers, yada, yada. So again, I think it's one of those things that's kind of left up to us to interpret. But, I would say, like, for me personally, I would feel like his attachment to Guts is gone by making the sacrifice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could be proven wrong in the future, because who knows what Miura might throw at us. With Rickard and everything, I think it's just because, I mean, he's being honest. Like, Rickard wasn't a sacrifice, and he's there, and he's like, hey, Rickard, if you learn the truth and you're not, and you don't hate me, then I'll welcome you aboard. Because he's welcoming everybody aboard, you know, anybody that will join his cause. So extending that invite out to Rickard, I think, was just him just being the Hawk of Light, you know, just saying that, like, you, of course you are welcome. Everybody is welcome as long as you follow me, you know.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
No, okay.
We're still here.
Okay. Thank God.
I was in thought.
Okay. Me too.
As Berserk often does to me.
Yes.
Also, I find it interesting that, like, Griffith is going along with this whole Hawk of Light thing. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I know he's always wanted to be worshipped and have his own kingdom, but this seems grand even for him.
Yeah, I mean, what better way to get people to follow you, you know? If you have, like, if you have divine justice on your side, I mean, that's the ultimate authority. So may as well just play into it, you know, like when he got like the pontiff, you know, to sing his praises. I mean, right there is like, because especially in those days, I mean, it's even true today, but like, especially in like medieval times and whatnot, like the church was everything. Like religion was like, you followed this, you know, like this was God. This was like the highest authority there is, you know? And if a Griffith can display himself as like, you know, the Hawk of Light, a messiah, a Jesus-like figure, I mean, who could deny him? You know, if the pontiff and the church backs him, if the kingdom backs him, the princess backs him, everybody does, you know, how could you possibly refuse?
Yeah, I mean, it gets to the point even where major characters in Griffith's like repertoire, like this pontiff, considers it his divine destiny to never die until he is able to wed Griffith the princess, upon which he will die. I love just the way that Miura constantly brings up different facets of like religion and religious fanaticism throughout Berserk, obviously, you know, with like the messianic Hawk of Light, or like the entire antagonist list of the conviction arc,
yeah,
or the obscene amount of biblical imagery and references to certain biblical moments throughout like the entire series, you know. Even like Farnese's arc, where she starts off as like this religious crusader and then eventually like has an existential breakdown and like has to go through literal like multiple volumes of self-discovery before she can like join the Guts squad and everything. I've always just loved every like facet of religious fanaticism that Miura is able to squeeze into the corners of Berserk.
Oh yeah, I agree. Farnese is probably like, minus Guts, the best character in the manga, just as far as development goes. Like from where she starts to where she is now, it's just an incredible journey of a character, for sure. Also, yeah, everything like with the Holy See and everything that Miura has done with it, and Mazgus. I love Mazgus. He's my he's my favorite villain besides Griffith, because like, I love this dude. I love him because like he would be so scary in real life, you know.
Oh yeah,
he's
holy shit.
Like he is somebody who like legitimately terrifies me, because you could see a person doing this, you know, especially back in those times where like you just believe in something so strongly that even though you are doing horrific, obvious to us, you know, torture and like all this thing that is horrible, you should never do this to another human, but he's doing this with like this divine justice on his side, that he believes he's doing right. Like there's nothing malicious in what he's doing. Like he's not doing it for evil. He's not getting glee out of it. He's doing it because this is God's will, you know? And I think that's like the scariest thing about it, is because he truly, honestly believes that he's doing the right thing. And like, that's so fucked up. like that's so fucked up. The, like how he saves like the mother and her infant that was dying or whatever it is, and you know, they get the infant food and he's like, look, the fact that you did this for your child is a good thing, like, you know, we're gonna get the child healed and everything. It's like, but in order for you to do it, you sinned, and sorry, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like sin is sin, so you have to go to so he sends her to the torture chamber, and it's like, holy shit, you know, like he was so pleasant about it the entire time. But like for him, it's just, it's black and white. There's no middle ground. It's like, okay, a good thing came from this, but you still sinned. You still got to get tortured. And to me, that's scarier than any like apostle demon, you know, in Berserk.
Yeah.
Like, cause that's some real shit, man.
Yeah. Cause he has a reason. And if you just remove the axe and talked about the like, it's a pretty selfless reason. Like he really does believe in the salvation of mankind.
Yes.
Just the most fucked up version of it.
Yeah.
I also liked what you said about like the power imbalance sort of between like Guts and Griffith. Cause not only does Griffith have like this army and this country and this divine right to be a hero, but Guts is like this old swordsman that's been going around mass murdering, essentially. He's got an orphan with him, a bastard son, and two witches.
Yeah, yeah.
And an elf.
Not to mention the armor is literally removing his senses. Parts of his hair are going white. Excellent design choice, by the way. Fucking incredible.
Yeah.
At least the way it's implemented, where it starts showing up exactly the time you see Guts starting to open up to these new people. You're like, wow, changed man. Haha. But going so far as after the fight with like the sea god, Guts has lost like some of his ability to feel warmth, which is something that Skull Knight talked about 100 fucking chapters ago.
Yeah.
And it was like, if you use this armor, you're going to lose senses for a while. You may not be able to see. You may lose your sense of touch. You may lose your sense of self using this armor. Seeing this broken fucking guy, I am beyond excited to see, as most fans of the series are, just what the fuck is going to happen with him and Griffith, you know, whatever it may be. I don't actually think there's an ending Miura could give me, at least given the pedigree of his work so far. I don't think there's a chance he gives me anything I'm mad at. I don't think I just think he's going to give us whatever of the dozens of possible, like, well feeling payoffs there are, something incredible.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm sure Berserk will stick the landing in a way that nobody could possibly come up with. Again, for the parallels between Griffith and Guts, though, what I think is interesting is that, like, you know, in order to lose his humanity, Griffith sacrificed other people. But what's funny is that Guts, you know, he's basically sacrificing his own body, himself. Like you said, he's losing, you know, his ability to feel. His vision got blurry in that one scene when they're on the boat and whatnot. His taste is going away. So, like, on Guts's journey, he's giving himself, whereas, you know, Griffith gave other people to achieve something. So it's just another one of those, like, many, many parallels between the two.
Yeah. And I don't, like, know how into Gundam you are, Ryan, but I,
okay.
I don't think.
Oh my God.
So the Berserker mech suit, is that where you're going with?
No, there is. Oh. There is.
he's going to do it. Oh God.
So in Gundam Iron Blood Orphans, okay, the main one of the main characters is named Mikazuki. And he gets in his mobile suit, and they're basically like, just never use it at 100%, right? Because it's hooked up to his nervous system. So he repeatedly uses it at 100%. Of course. And by the end of the series, like, he literally can't walk and can only see out of one eye and, like, can't use his arms either outside of the robot. So he essentially only has bodily functions when he needs to kill something to protect his friends. And I don't know if I could live through another one of those.
Obviously, Gundam comes up a lot, as both of us are Gundam fans. Okay. Iron Blooded Orphans is on Netflix. It's really fucking good. Like, at the end of season one, there's, like, the first time he goes 100% of the two seasons. His right arm just doesn't work anymore. It just goes limp at the end of that fight. And he doesn't have a right arm for the entire second half of the series, basically. And then as the series progresses, he keeps doing this self... Okay, I'm seeing even more parallels with Mikazuki and Guts now, because...
You mean because the robot gets a giant sword?
Well, first of all, giant sword, yes, but I'm also going, like, the whole start of Guts' story was not having a purpose and looking for a purpose, and the entire point of Iron-Blooded Orphans is all of these orphans from Mars trying to find their purpose and place in the world, right? And watching, like, the lead fighter, the most, like, I have to defend people and give up my body so that the rest of my gang can find their purpose, right? And that is their purpose, is the exact same thing for Guts and
and Orga, his kind of adoptive older brother, really is what would happen if Griffith had good intentions.
Oh no, I lost both of you.
So that's interesting. That's a weird one. Also, we lost Ryan again.
Good morning again, everybody, and welcome to the second half of the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, because while recording last week, our internet just died for like half an hour, so we decided to take a break and come back and do this conclusion part the next Wednesday. So we've already been through a lot of stuff talking about Berserk. So we're going to do a little conclusion thing here. And I think the best way to address like this conclusion is to basically have everyone just give like a closing thoughts on Berserk and talk about what their personal favorite aspect of the entire series is. And any of you guys can go first, I guess, unless you'd like me to.
You can go first, Ryan, if you want.
Can I go last?
Yes.
Sure.
I'll go first then. My favorite part of Berserk, and I've texted Xavier about this as I've been reading the series. And to clarify, I didn't read the last 15 chapters yet.
Oh, I forgot about that. I was going to ask, did you finish it?
I didn't, because I wanted it to feel more real for the viewer, which is to say, okay. I completely forgot. but my favorite part of Berserk, and it has been since near the start, is I think the facial art and the facial expression art is the best in the manga industry and has made me cry multiple times, and is the way Miura is able to convey the entire emotional spectrum, both through the writing, right, but then through this facial work, whether it be very angry Guts basically looking like a demon, or the realness with which all of these characters are able to silently convey how they're feeling about things, or when they're on the pirate ship and Guts has been injured for a while and they're all about to die, and Guts like stands up, comes up from under the deck, and you get like a half shot of him like cracking his neck and rubbing his chin a little bit. The little subtle details of what Miura is able to get in the facial art of Berserk is something that's just always struck out to me as something that puts it above and beyond, even in the realm of all of the other things that kind of put Berserk above and beyond. It's added to that like effect of how real Berserk feels and how raw Berserk feels, and how Miura himself has described the series as more inspired by shoujo manga, and that it's about characters and romance and understanding and development. And I feel like the facial work he is able to like show off brings all of that together perfectly, at least for me. That's my favorite thing about Berserk by far. And the only note that I had initially when we talked about Berserk was to talk about how much I love the fucking facial art.
Nice.
Yeah, I find it really interesting now that you brought it up to think about the Berserk facial art, especially, I think, Ryan, you did a video on this recently. I've been rereading Vinland Saga, which is another series that does really detailed, really intense facial art. But there is something about the way that Miura does it, and both of these series do it amazingly, that like adds something. It's almost like a soft edge, I guess you could say, because the Vinland Saga emotions are very intense as they're meant to be, like to fit with the narrative. And they're very sharp and mostly aggressive, even in the peaceful moments. But for the most part, like Guts's expressions with the, like, excluding his murder boner, right, when he's not in full murder boner mode, are just sort of sad looks of regret, like directly at the reader.
Yeah. There's like one in particular that stands out to me, and I don't remember exactly like what chapter or anything, but it's right before he meets Griffith again on the Hill of Swords. It's like as he's walking with Erica and Casca. And it's like so crazy the amount of detail that Miura puts in Guts's one eye. He has one eye, but he puts so much emotion in just that one eye. And I think he's like thinking, because he just saw Griffith again, and he was thinking, you know, that he would hate him and everything. But he realized when he saw him in person, he was thinking like, he was brought back to the old days. He saw him first as a friend before he saw him as something else. And you just somehow Miura just channeled that all into one drawing of Guts just kind of looking off to the distance in his eye. And like, I don't know. It's like one of the most like beautiful, profound things that you could do with character expressions and stuff. So the fact that you mentioned that is really, it immediately brought that scene into my head.
For me, I guess my favorite part of Berserk is something a little bit more abstract, but also something you rarely get in like the manga industry, which is the profound amount of trust I have in Miura as both an author and an artist. because even in the times when Berserk is slow and I'm wondering where this is all going, or when I start feeling like the art has hit a plateau, almost as if in perfect timing, there's something that pushes it over the edge and re-interests me. And I don't think there's a manga author that inspires that level of trust in me. Not even like Oda with One Piece, which is such a long-running and amazing ride of a shonen. There's always that worry in the back of my head of what if One Piece doesn't end well? And I cannot imagine a world in which Berserk does not end well.
I think there's only one other mangaka who I actually have close to that level of faith in, even if I have more faith in Miura. I have a pretty astounding amount of faith in Araki to stick the landings in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I really expect JoJolion to end very well, and I know that might be the optimist in me. But throughout Berserk, like throughout being a manga fan, people kept telling me, Berserk is a masterpiece. Berserk will change your life. Berserk is special. And reading it chapter after chapter, I'm completely with you. I have never had so much faith in a creator, even though he's very, very busy playing a lot of Idolmaster, to stick the landing and like create like the story of multiple generations at this point. I have complete faith in Miura.
Yeah, definitely. I do too. Just in the fact that he can, there are so many times in Berserk where I never expected what was coming next, and then he just exceeded my expectations. And that happens over and over again throughout the entire manga. And this might be a little off topic, but I know a lot of people like aren't digging the Fantasia arc where it is right now and everything. And I think a lot of that is because of the infrequency of the chapter releases. But if you read it all straight through, I think that Miura still has that edge that he's always had. He still has that storytelling ability. He still has that pulling the rug out from under you kind of thing. Like, I think it was just easier to accept that when you like read a bunch of Berserk as a chunk, but then when you catch up and you have to read it, you know, every couple of months, you might feel like you lose that, but I'm telling you, it's still there no matter what, you know?
Yeah, I've definitely observed the exhaustion of waiting for a new chapter. But I just feel like when you like cut the Fantasia arc out, like of everything else, especially with the chapters that we have gotten recently, like you can't tell me that it's not interesting to watch Farnese grow into like a legitimate witch and find her place within the group, kind of last of everyone almost. And to see now, like with the introduction of the dwarves, like there always is something new that you had a question about that is suddenly getting slowly revealed.
And he's continuing to do like his slow drip of exposition that he does, where like once every insert large number of chapters here, we get like a detail about Skull Knight or something. Mm-hmm. He's continuing to slowly build that intrigue. I can speak from someone who is just now catching up on his first read of Berserk ever. The Fantasia arc, the part that I've read, right, which is only a small chunk of it, has felt like classic great fucking Berserk. Every chapter of Berserk, all 345 I've read so far, has felt like classic good fucking Berserk all the way through. For better and worse, I have complete faith in him. That's me.
Definitely. So my favorite aspect of Berserk, it's a really, really tough question, really. I think I might have two. I think the first one I'll just say is the love story between Guts and Casca, because I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff to begin with. You know, I'm a romantic at heart, at least I like to believe I am, you know? And it's the fact that, well, one, everything in the Golden Age, like building up their relationship and everything, I think is beautifully done. I can't remember. I think on the first half, we talked about the wounds chapters a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought that was just so beautifully done. And I hadn't seen anything like it in any other, you know, manga or anime or fictional material in a long time, like anything even close to how I felt about those characters connecting. And then afterwards, just seeing what Guts goes through, seeing him, you know, battling up the entire Tower of Conviction to get to her after he realizes his mistake of leaving, you know, and trying to come back and everything, you know, she's going to be like burned at the stake, and he's like fighting all these pseudo apostles and Mosgus and stuff. And then like, he finally gets to her, and like, she doesn't even like understand, cause she's, you know, so like out of her mind, lost her mind and whatnot. But he hugs her, and he's just, it's something about that moment. I just think that moment is so friggin' beautiful. And it's just, it's about him, one, apologizing, two, you know, doing things differently moving forward, and three, just, you know, appreciating who Casca was, even if that's not who she is right now. And the whole story has been mostly about Guts trying to help Casca, either trying to help protect her or trying to, you know, restore her mind once he realized that that was a possibility. And the whole journey to Elfhelm and the reason why they're there and everything that happens is because of like the love that he feels for this person. And, you know, where would he be without that? Without that, the Beast of Darkness would have taken over a long time ago, you know?
Yeah.
I think it stated, you know, she is the flame that keeps his darkness away and everything. So I just, the love that he has for her is just like beyond what I see in most stories, because it's not even about them being together. It's really just about him trying to make sure she's okay. And like, I don't know, I don't feel like you see that enough anymore. I feel like anymore, like, love stories are really cheesy, or they don't work, or you don't feel the chemistry or anything. But when it comes to Guts and Casca, it's just, it's something on another level, man. I can't explain it. And then, my other favorite aspect of Berserk, I think, is just, the atmosphere of, you know, continuing to struggle in a world that is constantly beating you down and against you. I think it's just like the theme of it, you would call it, because, again, that's been Guts's entire life. His entire existence is just fighting for the sake of living. And, you know, is that enough? Do you need some sort of like big goal, ambition, dream, you know, or is living enough? You know, it's one of those kind of constant struggles, but for Guts, it is, you know, he's never just allowed himself to roll over and die. You know, he's like, if I die, I die, but I'm going to fight till the bitter end, no matter what. And there's something very appealing about that, to watch a character go through that and to like kind of envision it into your own life, you know, your own struggles. What do you deal with on a daily basis? And it's like, is it worth still going through? And then you think about Guts, or at least I do. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't care how much I have to struggle or how much suffering I have to go through. It's like, I'm going to keep going because I can keep going, you know? And it's like a very inspiring thing to me. So I'm sorry that was a little long-winded, but I think those are the two highest aspects that I praise Berserk for by far.
No, I'm completely with you on that, on both of them. Also a sucker for many a romance. I think the only one that I really love that comes close is the romance in Kare Kano, or His and Hers Circumstances, which is a Hideaki Anno show that's a fucking masterwork. But on the second one there, right, 2020 has been a wild time for everyone on Earth. For whoever listens to this 50 years from now, yeah, we're in the international pandemic. Almost 200,000 Americans are dead. Currently, California's on fire again. A billion things are going on, and it can be difficult to get out of bed in the morning sometimes, man. And this might sound kind of cheesy, but I've woken up some mornings and been like, I don't want to move. And then I will literally think of like Skull Knight naming Guts the Struggler and be like, I'm getting out of bed for the sake of getting the fuck out of bed.
Right.
I'll get up and do what I got to do. And on the hard days, it's really, really inspiring. I'm completely with you, man.
Yeah. Media just sort of has that power. I know for us and for a lot of other people. And I never think it's silly when someone's like, this is what this media means to me, or this is how I get up out of bed in the morning, because I feel like you can't create media that doesn't in some way reflect you or people you've seen. And I think that Miura, or someone he's seen, has gone through a really hard struggle, and he's been able to capture that really well. And I think probably the only other person I've seen even come close to capturing that struggle as well, or at least that hit me the hardest, was like reading old Full Metal Alchemist, like before the anime and everything. Yeah. Or before I knew the anime existed, to be clear. Reading Full Metal Alchemist, like, was that kind of experience. And Berserk takes that experience and it breaks the dial and goes to, like, 15 and creates these pockets of, like, time of looking back and being like, yeah, no, I can get through this. Also, I liked what you said about Casca being sort of his light in the darkness, because mm-hmm. I think Miura is very aware of all of this and, like, how good he is, not to, like, say he toots his own horn, at creating this romance, because when we see the Beast of Darkness, like, sort of getting at Guts, even when he's not in full berserk mode, it's him about to do harm to Casca.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, it's super dark. It deals with, like, I mean, Berserk is so, like, complex, it's ridiculous, but yeah, it deals with that, you know, that dark side of the mind where it's like, you know, oh, just get rid of her. If you got rid of her, you know, she would, you know, you wouldn't be putting yourself through all this. You could just go fight Griffith. Like, you could, you know, abandon the silly quest that, like, you have to fight all these stupid freaking trolls and stuff. Like, you're doing all this for her. Like, just, she's not even who she was before. Like, just kill her and get it over with, you know? But all that is, and that's why it's so great too, is because Guts is human, you know? He's not just some virtuous, great, heroic character. Like, he's a guy that's been through a lot of stuff and has trauma because of that. And there is that dark part of his mind where he's like, you know, things would probably be better if Casca wasn't here. It's a part that he doesn't want to, you know, it's not his true self, but it's a part of him. You know what I mean? It's that dark part of the mind, and it's scary, man. And it leaves kind of like the tension for our characters too, because it's like, well, what if Guts ever kind of delved into that aspect of himself? Yeah. But time and time again, he proves the opposite. He hasn't faced it, like, face to face, but, like, he always chooses the best option for Casca, despite the Beast's influence and despite the situations that he's in. So he's proven that he hasn't been, that he hasn't fallen into it, you know?
And yeah. I was going to say, I also love how, at times when he is about to go, like, to his absolute worst, Miura has shown the importance of, like, having a support group and having, like, a support system, because people shouldn't have to handle these things alone. And he shows this through, like, Sherk, if that's how you pronounce her name, like, astral projecting into the fucking armor to keep him grounded and to help him. Mm-hmm. Because in this whole struggle, do what you need to do. Don't give up. Keep trying. The world's going to kick your ass. You have to keep going. Miura makes sure to highlight in some of the most gorgeous panels in the entire manga, but you don't have to do it by yourself. We can fucking work together, because life is hard enough when there's nobody. And it's not, like, emasculating. It's not painful. It's not, it doesn't make you a worse person to reach out or to work with other people towards those goals, which is just another fucking fantastic part of the series.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree with that.
If that's the conclusion of that, I just wanted to, like, say, any last closing thoughts about Berserk? Because mine is just, I think Berserk is important, and if you can handle the adult content and you made it this far in the podcast, it is worth your time. That's my closing thoughts on Berserk.
Yeah, I would definitely say, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah, I would say Berserk is my favorite piece of fiction, not just manga, but, like, fiction in general. It connects with me on a very deep level. And I feel like there are very important things in it about life, about dealing with your darkness, about love and everything. But in the midst of that, we also get really cool giant swords slicing through monsters, you know, through half of it. So it's fantastic. You know, that's in there too, but it is, I mean, it's, I think I said in the beginning of the podcast, like, it's not a series for everybody, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be, because there is a lot of adult content. There are, you know, some people want a more, like, ground, like, realistic, you know, no monsters and demons and stuff in their stories and whatnot. So it depends on if you're open to that sort of thing. But I'll definitely say that if you are, and you're willing to pick up on the things, the themes and ideas that are on display in Berserk, I definitely think that it's a once in a lifetime experience, and you won't regret it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, again, Berserk is not a series for everyone. Dark content, very adult content at times, and handles some really dark themes that can take you some dark places. But it is one of the most incredible things that I've read. I know I am one of the people who don't really think that you can adapt it, so I will always say go read the manga, because as good as any adaptation is, I don't think it will ever fully capture things like Miura's art and such. And if you can read it, then I really, really would encourage you to. And also, while I acknowledge Berserk is dark, I feel like something that comes up with a lot of these seinen manga and things that are darker, Berserk is not needlessly edgy. It is trying to tell a very specific story, and though the way it chooses to tell that story is with darker themes than you could, it is handled with as much respect as he could.
Hell yeah, I completely agree. On to the last part of our episode today, the not Berserk-y part, because we could just continue talking about Berserk for the next 12 hours. In fact, that's half of Ryan's channel. He just does it.
Pretty much.
But first of all, I wanted to congratulate you, because I think you got to 30,000 subscribers in between the two recording sessions
on your
main channel. Look at you. Yeah. Like, hell yeah. What, 2 weeks apart? You went from like 22.
Let's just hope I don't lose it.
Yes.
Massive, massive hope you don't lose it. I have faith in you. I liked the shitpost about Mike Tyson today.
You know, I was thinking, listen, because I started a second channel, like, while I'm waiting for the first one to figure out if I'm going to be able to keep it or not, I just figured, like, why don't I just, like, upload some shitposts? Like, I don't know. Like, what's it matter? Like, I only got, like, a couple people to come over into the second channel, you know, from the first one anyway. So it's like, I'll just put random stuff on it.
Look, I'm a proud member of the 3K that came over. I'm with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That being said, Xavier and I want to ask you about a certain series, because we think it is so aggressively up your alley, and we think you would make excellent videos about it. So Xavier, could you take it away, please?
Oh, so has anything come across your desk about a manga series called Record of Ragnarok, or like Shimatsu no Valkyrie?
Yeah, yeah. Just in the comments of videos.
I'm glad that the comments agree. So someone decided, and I don't even know the author's name, so I feel really bad because they're quickly becoming one of my favorites. Someone decided it would be a good idea to make a manga that at the current point is a giant tournament arc, akin to the Dark Tournament.
Okay.
That is, what if the gods decided to eliminate humanity, but the Valkyries said, but don't you want to do a big fight tournament instead? The gods proceed to laugh at the Valkyries and say, but humans would never win. Uh-huh. And the Valkyries call them chicken and bait the gods into it. So it's humanity's 10 best again. Is it 10 or 11?
It's 13. It's 13.
It's 13. Okay. Yeah. So it's humanity's 13 best versus the gods' 13 best in a fighting tournament, but it's also like extremely emotional and well drawn. It's very interesting.
Wait, how do the humans stand a chance against the gods?
Okay.
Is there a power system at play?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
There's a thing called Volund, right? And Volund is, of the 13 Valkyries, each Valkyrie can pair with a human and do like a soul bond to make a really cool weapon that can damage gods, right?
Oh, okay.
So
but it's only the weapon.
Yeah,
the rest of you is still human.
I will say the names, Fukui Takumi and Umimura Shinya. It's written by two people, and the illustrator is Aji Chika, and the art, fucking gorgeous. The writing of these fights, fucking impeccable. And it's the only series where so far it's released monthly, and we're at about 34 chapters right now. And we're in the middle of fight number 5 of this big tournament. I have never been able to predict for certain how any of the fights would go. Every fight so far is what I would call a strong 8 to a 10 on the overall manga fighting tiers.
Damn.
It's fucking incredible.
Okay.
I will say, and just to tell you, this is all I'll say, because I don't want to do big spoilers. The second fight is just Adam, like the biblical Adam.
Okay.
In a fist fight to the death against Zeus for like 8 chapters straight, and it's one of the best fights in manga history.
Oh my God.
Because
I'm looking at some of the artwork right now on Google search. I mean, it looks pretty dope.
It's incredible. The chapters are long. It's released monthly.
Okay.
What I'll say is, it's just so damn engaging, and we think you would really enjoy it because we are massive shills for how good this series is on our show.
All right, dude, I'll check it out.
Hell yeah, it's sure. So good. There.
How many chapters are out?
Only like 34, okay. I think. Like, I read it. Yeah, they're long chapters, but I read it in like a weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I started reading it, like, it was still in the middle of the first fight, and that was last year, I want to say.
I don't think it's ever going to get an anime adaptation, but it's just sort of like, what if we took all of the hype moments and the emotion and the crazy action of a top-tier tournament arc and made that the entire series, and every single biblical or religious or mythological tradition is true. All of the gods are real. And the people they're taking from history are people like Chinese champion Lu Bu, or like Sasaki Kojiro, or Adam, or a famous World War II sniper who we haven't seen yet.
Damn.
Versus people like Thor and Shiva and Zeus and the Buddha. Like, this is, everything is true. It's fucking bonkers, and we think you'd like it.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think I would like this. I'll have to check it out. Why don't you think there would be an anime? I feel like this is something that would like work really well.
Mostly just because it takes a while, and it would take a while. Like, for an anime to be made of this, possibly after it ends, because it is a monthly series. And also I worry about the popularity of the anime in the West, because for the most part, it is a thing that most people in the anime community, especially people who are interested in things like Vinland Saga and Drifters and Berserk, know about. Like, not a lot of people are making content on, so the awareness isn't there as much.
But it has everything going for it to, like, if it got popular, be a fucking like classic of shonen to seinen, just like brutal action. It's fantastic. And Xavier texted me last Tuesday before even having you on, and was like, this guy's favorite shit is like Gantz and Vagabond and Attack on Titan and Berserk. We're telling him to read Record of Ragnarok.
I will definitely be checking it out for sure.
All right. That brings us to my last thing, which is the thing we do for all of our guests. We did it on the first guest episode, and we gave our answers. But we need to ask you, we don't know your sexuality, so who are your top-tier waifus and husbandos from anime and manga? That's it. That's the last question that we ask all of our guests at the end of the guest spot episodes.
Oh, man. Well, I think my top waifus, I made a list a while back, but I don't remember like the order I put anyone on, but I'll say that my number one is probably, Icarus from Heaven's Lost Property.
Nice.
Because I mean, well, there's the physique aspect, but then there's also, you know, but she also is like super powerful, and she could like make pretty much anything you want happen. She could turn me into a girl if I wanted to be one for a day. Like, it's like I could be my own waifu for a minute. Like, you know, I don't know. It's mostly the look, though. I'm not gonna lie.
I respect this pick. This is fair.
Yeah. And then I know this is unconventional pick because a lot of people don't like her, but I really liked when I was younger. I liked Ayaka from Tenchi Muyo. She's like a purple-haired princess from Jiraiya. She's kind of like stuck up and prissy, but like, I don't know. There's something about it I like.
You know what? I've never seen that series. Xavier,
you've never seen Muyo?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to get bullied in private for this. I need to let you know. He's going to bully me.
No, I mean, it was a 90s show. Like, it's, and it wasn't like super good. It was like, I mean, it was really funny and there was like some good action moments, but it was a Toonami show back in the day. But
that's why he's going to get bullied, because he didn't watch Toonami. Oh, man.
I watched some Toonami. I was late. I'm a fucking child, I swear.
But there's like, okay, so there's like the character Tenchi and there's like the two girls that want him the most. And like, one is Ryoko and she's like a space pirate and she's got all these like superpowers and stuff. So everyone liked her the best. And then there's Ayaka, the princess, who's kind of like more like timid and docile. But I don't know, man. I always liked Ayaka. So.
Then, fair enough.
Yeah. So what, and then what, husband? Husbands? I mean, guts. I don't know. It's just like, if there's anybody that like defines what it is to be a man, it's guts. What can I say?
That's completely fair. Our picks were like Xavier likes like godly women that could kick his ass.
Okay.
You ever seen Kill la Kill, Ryan?
I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
Ryuko from Kill la Kill is a personal favorite of mine, and then like Reagan from Mob Psycho 100, and then like Shara Aznable from Gundam were my picks personally. Xavier, you gonna share your picks for Ryan before we close this episode?
I'm trying to remember exactly what my picks were. I remember my waifus were like Haruko from Fooly Cooly, Anemone from Eureka 7, and then many, many other pink-haired punch women.
There was a pink-haired punch woman from Bleach. I said Lin from Fire Emblem.
Oh, Hiyori. Hiyori from Bleach. Hiyori Sarugaki. Not as like a, I would like to date this person. I just love that character.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So, how we normally end our episodes here is we like to kind of end it on a wholesome, happy, good luck with your weekend and week kind of note. So we'll like, do what I'm doing now, which is, first of all, thank you for coming on the show twice at this point. If you come on again, when I read Gantz 10 years from now, you know, we'll get around to it. But thank you for offering your time. I really hope that your channel doesn't get taken down, because I think you make some really excellent content. Yeah, of course.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you to Kentaro Miura for creating such an important piece of media for us all to enjoy. Thank you for all of you delightful listeners who waited an extra week for this episode because the internet said, haha, go fuck yourself. And then what we'll do now is like the two of you say some wholesome shit, Xavier, and then Ryan, you can lead us off on like a little wholesome thank you and the episode kind of deal.
You know, just as always, want to thank everyone for listening and for the patience, especially with these last two episodes having to come out bi-weekly. We moved, had to figure out new recording situations to suit our needs, which is always a struggle. You know, but we're going to keep making it. People keep listening to it, which I'm always happy to see. And we've somehow started to garner an international audience. So that's weird.
Sweet.
But I thank you guys for tuning in, and I thank the internet for letting me see that there is an international audience, because it's interesting looking at podcast analytics once you get into it. So it's been a fun time, and I have all of you to thank for that. And of course, thank you for Ryan to actually coming on and responding to a small podcast Twitter.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, this was a lot of fun, guys. I'm willing, you know, anytime I'm free and you want to have me on, I'm good to go. So
awesome.
Good with that. As for a wholesome ending, I hope everyone listening is, you know, drinking plenty of water, doing your push-ups, getting some healthy sleep, and reading Berserk.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And again, don't forget to do your push-ups every day. I'll be watching.